This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 423. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Fighting metagangs, the Spectre FaceTimes God, mystic accountants, and a boat full of datas. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, October 2nd, 2016. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you could leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Blue Beetle number one by Giffen, Collins, and Fajardo Jr. This is the first issue of the new ongoing series after the Rebirth special, and it begins with a series of dialogue boxes. Now, we see Jaime in his mask and Ted at the top of the page. It took me a while to realize the dialogue was between Jaime and his school friend, and I assumed the name Brenda was Jaime being sarcastic.
Yeah, it was very confusing, but then as we go on, we learn he's actually telling her about a dream he had.
Right.
And these scenes must be from the dream.
Yeah, and he's battling Dr. Fate in this Egyptian world. When Ted later mentions that Fate dropped by, this understandably freaks Jaime out.
Yes.
Back at school, Ted drops into career day. He has an assistant named Ms. Magnus, who I assume is related to Will Magnus.
You know, I thought, maybe, yeah.
Afterward, he sweeps Jaime off in the bug and explains they need to investigate metahuman gang members. For whatever reason, Ted doesn't want to give Jaime any details beforehand. He seems to be, well, I'll let you know as you need that information. Or maybe even after you need that information. I don't know if he's jealous of Jaime or is this just ego? What is going on with Ted?
I kind of thought maybe he didn't want Jaime to think he was working with the gang because the gang is apparently not necessarily good.
But it seems to me that if you give information when it's almost too late to be useful, that's almost worse.
Yes, it is.
And then at the gang's warehouse, this creature attacks Jaime, and he has to fight his way out of a shadow realm. And at this point, Ted name-checks Nightshade. And it turns out the creature is a gang member, and someone took his fellow members.
Oh, I thought somebody took his family.
Oh, maybe it is the family.
And it looked like the gang members maybe took the family or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so there's more metagang members arrive in the final panel. A little confusing for a Giffen title. He's usually more straightforward. Maybe the fact that Collins is the co-writer, it just seems, you know, it's like this could be better laid out, I think.
I think so, too.
But it's very interesting. The dialogue is crisp and the artwork is decent. Six-Pack and Dog Welder, Hard Traveling Heroes, number 2 by Ennis, Braun, and Caliz. So we begin with Dog Welder listening to an off-panel monologuer who talks about how it used to be a class act, but it's clearly gone downhill. And he has references to separate imprint, covers as works of art, and sales, makes it pretty clear that the subject is Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And the speaker is revealed to be Constantine, now with a space helmet and Hellblazer 44 ray gun. So they're making him into a space person. Just the idea of Hellblazer has never been a good fit in the mainline DCU.
Yes.
And of course, the helmet makes it very hard to smoke. But back to the main story with the Spectre, who's saying, I am here for the one known as Beitor. But he doesn't know what Beitor looks like, explaining that it was lost in the reshuffles, the 52 Infinities or Resurgent Crisis or something. Bueno stops Beitor from answering and saying, I am Beitor.
Because that's all he says.
Yeah. Back to Constantine, who explains to Dog Welder how he can speak through the dead dog. You just use it as a puppet. Yeah, he goes there. He also explains there have been dog welders throughout history.
So apparently you put on this mask and you become dog welder?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Beator gets loose and says, "I am Beator." And the others go all Spartacus and repeat him. Spectre starts swearing up a storm and then calls God on his cell phone, who tells him to go all Old Testament on them.
So he's going to take them all.
Then Dog Welder and his puppet dog arrive, which Spectre calls the first sign, apologizes, and leaves. Constantine tells them Dog Welder must learn more about himself on a spiritual journey, and the rest of Section 8 decide to tag along. I'm really kind of shocked that DC is printing this and not Vertigo or even Young Animal. I guess Young Animal wasn't available. Really should be not in the mainline DC. And of course, I love the ironic twist. The back cover of the comic is a house ad for the Constantine DVD.
Mm-hmm. So you like this one a lot, don't you?
I do, just because of all the inside DC references they make. It's rather disgusting.
Yeah, that's, I think, what I don't like about it.
Astro City number 39 from Vertigo by Busiek, Carnero, Ross, Pantazis, and Comicraft. After a few issues concentrating on heroes, we're back to what Astro City really does best, which are tales of civilians in a superhero world. We begin in 1748 France and a man about to be hanged by his crimes. At the moment of death, the hanged man takes over his body and flies off. Back to modern times, and Shadow Hill, Astro City's supernatural district. Marta Dabrescu runs a tax and accounting agency, and then when leaving home, she sets protections, like magical protections, at her door. Oh, and she can talk to the dead, we learn. She keeps seeing Hangman flying around in the area. Of course, many people do in Shadow Hill, but this point, he looks at her directly, and the last time this happened, her life completely changed. How, we don't know. In the office, one of her employees gives notice because she's got a better gig downtown, because the other agencies really use her place as a farm team, and she's okay with that. She drops by an old client and then resolves a disputed will, which is pretty easy when you can conjure up the departed and find out, well, what did you mean by that?
Yes.
And the departed just kind of scold all the people in the will, like, this is what you're fighting over? Unfortunately, when she does conjure up the dead, the effects linger and her nagging departed mother drops by and they have an argument. Back at the office, the hangman has come by to see her and he explains telepathically how he's in debt to the man back in 1748 as well as his descendants, so he helps them out when they call him. And of course, there's hundreds of descendants of this guy, but most of them don't even know about it or have forgotten or think it's just a myth. One of them is in jail for a real estate scam, but he's a patsy, so she calls up a downtown lawyer and gets him to represent the guy, and that's basically it there. We learn that Hangman has been watching her all her life, and we still don't know why.
So this is what I suspect. I suspect that he needs a new body soon, and it's going to be Marta's.
Oh, that's a good possibility. She's going to get in some accident or something?
Yeah.
Marta goes out to dinner and dancing with her boyfriend, and they end up in his apartment downtown because he doesn't like to go to Shadow Hill at night. I don't think I would either. An explosion occurs outside. It's art criminals doing an installation. So they just go back to bed, and she's thinking, well, it is pretty. I guess in a superhero world, this wouldn't impress you very much. It's like, oh, it's just a battle going on outside, whatever, go back to bed. I love the story. Of course, there's much left up in the air, as Busiek normally does. The fill-in artwork by Carmen Carnero, I thought was fantastic.
Yes,
I really enjoyed
very
that.
Good.
Star Trek Waypoint number one by IDW. So they just ran out the Star Trek ongoing title that was based in the Kelvin universe, and they're about to restart it as Star Trek Boldly Go. They're also starting this anthology series using all the TV series as source material. And this issue has two stories. We begin on a future Enterprise, which may be Enterprise E or F, it's unclear, with an older Geordi LaForge as captain, and a set of holographic datas seem to run the ship. His positronic brain was uploaded to the ship's computer. And there's also a set of regular crew who we never see. And why are they needed? I guess just for away missions or as backup in case the holographic system goes down? Mostly redundant to have a separate crew at that point.
Well, I don't know. think that there's still probably people who want to do research and things like that.
I suppose. So they've come across this glowing cube of a ship which sent out a mysterious message. They've determined humans are aboard. Starfleet can't decipher the message, but of course Data can, and he learns it's the Prime Directive. Data interfaces with the ship and determines it is a Starfleet ship, the Tyne ship Sasakurazaka, run by the computer, which is using the Prime Directive to trap the dying crew aboard because basically the 24th century is too primitive to be interfered with, just like in the regular series. It's like, oh, primitive races, we can't, you know, pre-warp societies, we can't interfere with.
And I could see that, you know, pre-time travel societies you couldn't interfere with.
Right. And in order to cover the Prime Directive, it's actually set to self-destruct the ship. Data is forced to fully interface with it and give up his life to save them. The future humans are beamed aboard. LaForge is called before a Starfleet tribunal, including Admiral Picard for his actions. And they're like, well, what do we do with these future humans? And LaForge says, I have an idea. Assign them to fix the broken original Data. It's an intriguing story, but I suspect there's a novel I should have read before this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
The original series, Uhura, stars in the second, much shorter story, where she's beamed down with a team that gets dispersed across the planet due to a storm. While Scotty waits out the storm, Uhura is alone, at least for a moment. A weird plant worm creature comes out of the brush and connects with her. She shows it how to build a cover from some branches and mats from nearby grasses. All along, she's talking and singing to it. She tries to teach it Starfleet English with little success. The storm passes, and she's beamed up with no time to say goodbye. The creature looks up and then wanders back into the brush. I thought it was a sweet story.
A sweet story, except, of course, she's just violating the Prime Directive there.
Yeah. The artwork in the stories I thought was decent, but the cover looks like a seventh grader did it for a sci-fi convention art gallery. It's like, wow, that's just really poor artwork. If you're starting off a new series, like, you better find somebody else, IDW. You've got some good artists. Anyways, before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
And guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm pushing the button and go.
TV related?
Yes.
One person on the cover?
Yes.
Is it person from a TV show?
Yes.
On one of the three major networks?
No.
On Fox?
No.
On a broadcast network?
No.
On cable?
Yes.
On high-end pay cable?
Yes.
Okay, so HBO, Showtime?
No.
Stars?
Yes.
Okay, on Stars, is this person the star of the show?
One of them.
One of the stars. And is it a genre show?
Yes.
Is it science fiction?
No.
Is it fantasy?
Sort of.
Is it horror?
No.
Okay, so somewhere in science fiction fantasy. And it's on Stars. Ooh. Is this person over 40?
Oh, you probably won't recognize the person.
Lovely.
You might recognize the show.
The show. Okay, it's...
But probably not, so I don't even know.
Oh, I don't know. It's Stars. I know very little about what's on Stars. Is it a new show?
No.
Okay, an existing show on Stars.
Yes.
Sci-fi, fantasy related. And is it that show about the time traveling and the Scottish?
It is.
Okay.
What's the name of that show?
I don't remember the name of the show.
I know you won't know the person, but you have 25 seconds if you want to try to remember the name of the show.
It's over something?
No, but you've got the right first letter.
Outlander.
Ooh, yay, you got it.
Who's the guy?
Sam somebody? I don't even know.
Sam somebody.
Sam somebody.
Okay. Well, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review. And by the way, we've just restarted Decawatt Playhouse one of our other podcasts. So you can check that out on both the site and in iTunes.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. You can call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.